Tick Tick Boom is a 3-chapter pop rock musical about facing crossroads in life and holding on to your dreams that was first produced off-Broadway in 2001. Tick Tick Boom plays at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland, from September 4th through the 27th. More information about Tick Tick Boom can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
It's 11 o'clock. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. Coming right up, it's The Dirtbag with your host, Glenn Andreessen. He welcomes back today John Saltveit, master grafter of fruit trees, and they'll be talking about food fermentation and eating weeds. Sounds like fun. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support for your community radio station. If you have not become a member yet, you can easily remedy that situation by going to kboo.fm on the web and clicking where it says Donate Today. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Hopworks Brewery, committed to creating world-class food and organic beer as sustainably as possible at their carbon-neutral eco brew pubs. Hopworks is located at Southeast 29th and Powell Boulevard, and Hopworks Bike Bar is at North Williams and Shaver. Available on draft and in bottles throughout Cascadia. Information at 503-232-HOPS or hopworksbeer.com. Also by One Green World. It's a nursery offering hard-to-find fruiting plants designed to help you grow your own food and decorate your yard, deck, or patio. Now located in Portland at 6469 Southeast 134th. For a color catalog, the number is 1-877-353-4028 or online at onegreenworld.com. And now we're going to go right to The Dirtbag.
Well, good morning. Here we are at 9:10 at 11. How's that? September 10th, 11 o'clock. Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. Welcome to The Dirt Bag. No Jim today, but his able replacement sitting across from me today, John Saltveit. Welcome back, John.
Thank you, Glenn. Good to be here.
John was here about a year ago, I believe, and had such a good time. I was hoping he could come back. And we've got a lot of things to talk about. John does a lot of experimentation, and he mentioned that he's doing a lot of fermentation as well as eating weeds. So we're going to talk about that. We've made weeds our plants of the month today, and wherever that fits in, we'll do that. I also hope to talk about have John talk about the Home Orchard Society's All About Fruit Show that's coming up next month. I think we'll have another dirt bag before that. And we've got tickets to give away. Mm-hmm. 3 pairs or maybe even more here. Dawn said I could have 3. But if there's more, I'll bet you she'll go for it too. The tickets are for the final film in the Hollywood Theater's Eco Film Series. This film is on September 25th at 7:30 at the Hollywood Theater. It's called Tiny, a story about living small. Here's what it says about that movie. Tiny is a documentary about home and how we find it. The film follows one couple's attempt to build a tiny home from scratch and profiles other families who have downsized their lives into homes smaller than the average parking space. through homes stripped down to their essentials, the film raises questions about good design, the nature of home, and the changing American dream. So, you get our garden snumpers today, and you'll have a pair of tickets waiting for you there at the door, if all goes well. And I think they do. Okay, John, any other events besides the Home Orchard Society that you know about coming up?
One really good source for events is to look on the Portland Nursery. Osmond has a lot of classes, so that's, and a lot of them are free, so that's something to check out. Mm-hmm. I went to one this summer on cultivating mushrooms. It was really good.
Yeah, there's a, you know, many nurseries these days are having classes and whatever and whatever, so that's that's good.
The 7Ds out in Cedar Hills also has classes. So that's
I think all of the 7Ds do, many of them. So one is near you, no doubt.
Yeah.
Okay, but the Home Orchard Society is all about fruit show in, what day is that?
I believe
what
it's
weekend
on,
is it?
October 21st, 20th and 21st, I believe.
Okay. Yeah. So we will have another dirt bag in before there too. But just briefly. Yeah. What, is still, we think it may be the largest in
the usually the largest exposition of fruit in North America. And so 500 varieties of apples, 500 varieties of pears, many, many other kinds of fruit, medlar, kiwis, persimmons. I can't even think of all the different kinds of fruits they're going to have, quinces. You know.
And most of these are available for tasting.
Yeah. And what you want to do is come and taste something and bring in a notebook and write down the varieties you really like to eat, because then you come back in the spring and you come to the Scion Exchange and you get any number of scions for free and graft those into your trees. And some of them you don't have to know how to graft, like figs and quinces, medlars, grapes. You just stick them in the ground and they grow. So it's a really great opportunity.
And we'll have more on that, but it's the sight and smell, the aroma is overpowering. Well, in a good way. When you walk in, it's just it's just fruit everywhere, and you know, hundreds of people too, and well, you know, almost 1,000.
And a lot of people share in ideas. They have an expert table that you and I have both worked at, where people come by and they say, well, I got a problem with this. What do I do? And then we come up and we say this. And then another guy says, well, or you could do this. And another guy says, or you could try this. And they have rootstock, and they have books for sale. And they have usually Portland Fruit Tree Project has a booth there. And there are all kinds of things going on that people can learn about.
And this year, once again, it'll be at the
Canby. Yeah.
In Canby.
Clackamas County Fairgrounds in Canby.
Right. Okay. So we'll have more information on that a bit later. Okay. Let's see here. What do we want to begin with? Let's talk about weeds.
All right.
But I like your idea, your question here, your garden stumper here, that this will be the first garden stumper, and we will open the phone lines up for that to answer the question. 503-231-8187. And that's also the number to call if you have any gardening question. We've got lots of gardening going on these days. And one of the things that John and I will talk about today is some of the experiments that we have conducted this year or in past years that are worth passing on. And if you have an experiment that you're conducting this year in the garden, we'd like to hear about it. It's how we learn things. So, John, you've got the first garden stumper there?
I got it right here, and here's your question.
This deals with our topic at hand here, weeds.
What common garden weed sounds like a fruit, but is an edible leafy green packed with calcium?
Okay, if you know the answer to that, 503-231-8187. And we'll try not to talk about this weed until we get it answered. But there might be other ones. Have you been eating this particular weed here lately?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well,
in many ways.
Okay. So you've been eating weeds from your garden?
Yeah. Yeah. Because then I know they're organic. It's done in a permaculture way. There's a lot of humus. It has all the nitrogen. It has all the nutrients that I need, and it's healthy.
Okay. So, what did you have for dinner last night?
Okay, I had, well, let me tell you what I had for lunch today because I can't remember that.
Okay.
So I've been reading about these, all this, how you're not supposed to eat so many grains, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, because wheat in particular has too much gluten in it, and that can have a factor. So I made these sandwiches. So I took a collard green leaf and rolled it up with some. Actually, yesterday I went to go gathering mushrooms, and I gathered a whole bunch of lobster mushrooms.
These are in a forest someplace.
Yeah.
Not in your yard.
Not in my yard. Okay. Although I do cultivate mushrooms in my yard, these were in a forest. So I did gather a whole bunch of these, and then I cooked them up, and then I put them in with black-eyed peas and yogurt and this eggplant garlic sauce that you can get at Trader Joe's, and wrapped it up into kind of a global wrap. Oh, and add a little bit of... not ginseng, but ginger.
Uh-huh. But were there any weeds in there?
There were not. Well, collard greens can continue on for years and years.
Yeah, so, yeah. All right.
So don't always eat weeds, but how I have been eating a lot of weeds recently is in my sauerkraut. In my fermentations.
Oh, I see.
Because there are some weeds that are very fibrous, you know, and you leave them in there for 4 or 5 days. Well, they're soft now. There's some that can be too bitter. Well, you put them in there for 4 days. They're not bitter anymore. They taste like pickles. They taste like lettuce and pickles mixed together.
Uh-huh.
So there are some that are a little rough, slightly spiky.
Yeah.
But you put them in there for 4 days, they're not spiky anymore.
All right, hold that thought, because let's go to the phones and see if we have a garden stumper. Good morning, Dina.
Hello.
You have a question or an answer for us?
I have an answer.
All right, what is it?
Is it a clover?
No, does not sound like a fruit.
Oh, it has to sound like a fruit.
Yeah, this one does sound like a fruit.
Should I repeat the question?
Yeah, repeat the question
kiwi.
Here.
Kiwi.
Kiwi's not a... A weed.
Not a weed. That's a cultivated fruit.
So this is going to be a weed here.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the question again for our listeners.
What common garden weed sounds like a fruit, but is an edible leafy green packed with calcium?
All right. Even Tammy's puzzling over that one. Well, it is called the garden stumper. Okay, so don't mention that the answer yet on that one. Okay, well, nice try. Okay, no more phone calls on that? No, okay. And it's pretty, you know, when you hear it, you say, oh, yeah, I've heard of that as a weed. You've also heard it as a fruit. We can start giving hints a little bit later too.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so what other weeds have you been?
Well,
talk about this fermentation. What have you been what weeds have you been fermenting?
Well, there's another one called spiny sow thistle. And it's actually in this book, John Kalis, who's a local guy. He wrote a book called Edible Wild Plants. It's an outstanding book. I highly recommend it. I have no financial arrangement with him or anybody I'm going to be mentioning today. But I just met him once to buy the book. And it just shows such detail on knowing. Because, you know, you go to your yard and you're like, oh, that's a weed, that's a weed, that's a weed. And you're like, well, how do I know that this is one that I actually can eat or one that's going to make me sick? And he gets very good detail on exactly, you know, how do you know that that's this weed and not the other weed? I don't know, it's this weed and not the other weed. So spiny sow thistle tastes really good. It's a little bit, as you might guess, spiny.
Yeah.
So I've been putting it in my sauerkraut for a few days, and it's not spiny anymore.
Huh. Are there weeds that are poisonous?
Yes, absolutely. Baneberry is a very well-known one with red berries.
Okay.
That's related nightshades.
In my mind, I was thinking of leafy greens or something like that.
Yeah,
but I can certainly understand nightshade.
It's very leafy when you look at it, you know.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So, and there are some, like a, there's some weeds that are just not, you know, you could eat them, but you probably get mildly sick, and that's not really a good outcome.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay.
Or some of them are so harsh that you're like, oh my God, there's no way I can eat this.
You could leave it in your in your sauerkraut for a year, and
it
still wouldn't be.
So that's, that's kind of the deal with it.
Okay.
So.
And this is a common weed too, this spiny
sow thistle? Yeah, actually there's two sow thistles. There's the spiny sow thistle, which is a larger plant you'll see earlier in the year. And then now we're getting into seeing a lot of just the sow thistle.
Okay.
And one thing to remember about a lot of these weeds in our gardens, they were brought on purpose from Europe and Asia that immigrants brought with them to make sure that they would have healthy vegetables when they came to this new country, because I don't know if they have any healthy vegetables over there. So to them, and some of these weeds, you go to these countries and you see them in the farmer's markets. They're selling these weeds. And you go, I don't have to buy that. I just find it in my yard.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Good morning, Stevie. You're with the Dirtbag.
Hi.
What you got?
So I was wondering if it's a plantain.
Ding, 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 ding. Correct. Yeah, nice job. Sounds
plantain.
Like a fruit.
The plantain.
The large
Tammy
tropical
says, what's that?
Banana-like fruit that's starchy. Yes, excellent job.
Okay, Stevie, stay on the line and give your name and particulars to Tammy, and we will make sure your name's at the door on the guest list for the 25th.
Thank you guys so much.
You bet. Okay, let's talk about the plantain then here a little bit.
Yeah. It is.
What does it look like, first of all?
Okay.
Describe
it. It's low. If you see one, you will recognize it as, I've seen that weed before.
Yeah.
It has a very rounded leaf, and it has seeds that go straight up, and they're just seeds. It's a spike full of seeds. It's somewhat stringy, but again, if you put this in your sauerkraut for a few days, it's not so stringy and fibrous anymore. And remember, all of this sauerkraut fermentation, kimchi, these are the things that doctors are all saying now. Just tons. Michael Pollan wrote an enormous article about this in New York Times. These are the things that we need to be eating because our gut has more cells in it that are not us. 90% of the cells within our body are not us. They are these things in our intestines that really are affecting in a huge way our health, our mental health, our propensity to get cancer, heart attacks. They just have a tremendous impact on our health. And so basically all of the nutritionally oriented doctors now are telling you need to eat fermented vegetables. And I'm just saying, hey, I can get that for free.
Yeah. That's a good thing. All right, this is the Dirtbag. I'm speaking with John Saltfight, who's a major garden experimenter, and he grafts just about anything to everything. We've talked about that at some point, too. All right, Tammy, is there any more on the phone there? Yes, we do have some phone calls, and Tammy is going to get to those very quickly right about now. No. Yes? She's tearing her heads out. Okay, here we go. Good morning.
Glenn?
Yeah. Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Yeah, I'm listening. Well, okay. I cover purslane, the weed purslane.
Yeah. Okay, John, you want to talk about that?
Excellent, excellent example of a weed. I just find it in my neighborhood. You don't have to buy it.
Describe it a little bit.
Okay. It's a fleshy weed. It might be called a succulent. It's probably the only succulent weed that you will find. It has kind of a rounded kind of leaves on it. It's slightly tart in flavor. One of the reasons you can do Google images on it and you'll see what it looks like.
Yeah.
And I think that's a highly useful activity to do for these. It is one of the very few vegetables that's very high in omega-3s, and I'm sure you've all heard about the nutritional importance of omega-3s, and people say, oh, well, I can't eat this fish because it's full of mercury, even though it has omega-3 in it. Purslane does not have mercury in it, so especially if you just grow it in your own organic yard.
Yeah.
So, and actually this summer I gathered a bunch from my neighborhood and just put it in my raised bed, put it throughout my yard. And then it's a cut and come again. So, you just chop it and eat it. And
how do you eat it?
Sauerkraut.
Sauerkraut.
It's a good way.
Okay.
Throw it in the salad. We have a big salad every dinner. That's the main part of our dinner every night. So we're always trying to eat more green leafy vegetables. That's just kind of one of the healthiest way to go.
All right. Any particular caller, any particular questions on purslane?
We use it in salad. It's a scourge to our garden. It's absolutely taken over. I generally would sow lettuce seeds mixed with a little sand and sprinkle them in a patch, and then put compost soil over it, and that starts my lettuce. This year, the purslane started right up with the lettuce, and it didn't overtake the lettuce, but it really reduced its production. and it's a solid bed of purslane with some lettuce growing up around inside.
The purslane's much better for you than the lettuce. I mean, lettuce is good for you, but purslane's a rock star, you know.
And doesn't purslane pull pretty easily?
Very, very easily, yeah. Especially in cement, in a sidewalk, it can be difficult, but in a garden, it's very easily. I dare you to go ferment a whole bunch of it.
Oh, he's throwing it down.
Okay.
Well, so just a little bit, and then we'll take our first musical break. How do you ferment it?
Fermenting, I highly recommend a book, Sandor Katz, The Art of Fermentation. It's really easy. I mean, basically all vegetables have these lactobacillus bacteria on them, which are healthy bacteria. You put them into a container, and you keep them underwater, usually like with a plate. And a rock. That's the simple old school method. It just keeps them underwater, and after about 2 weeks, they will start to have a kind of a sour, pickly flavor on them. That tells you that the lactobacillus, and if they taste like pickles, then they're good. And if they don't, they taste funky and weird, don't eat them because there's something that happened.
All right. That's the 22nd fermentation there.
Yeah.
Okay, Tammy, shall we take a break here? All right. This is Peter Gabriel digging in the dirt. Peter Gabriel, digging in the dirt. That's our theme today, digging. Okay, it's time for another garden stumper for questions. I'm going to switch gears here completely, but the number is still the same, 503-231-8187. Here's the stumper number two. Now we're moving into a nice wintertime project here to help you with your pollination next spring. Your fruit pollination is particularly good with that.
Okay, this one's a little bit more blue-collar because we want to, you know, include everybody. So the question is, what size of a drill bit should you use to make holes for nesting orchard mason bees?
Mm-hmm. Mason bee hole size, what they prefer. Mm-hmm. This is mason bees. Mm-hmm. 503-231-8187. This is pretty specific, too. very specific. But what we need to realize here is that even if you drill a hole of a different size, smaller or larger, you'll probably attract a native insect of some sort to use that, because that's what they do.
Some people like me who grow a lot of fruit want orchard bees because they're so effective at pollinating. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think your point is well taken, and that all of the native pollinating insects are important. And you know, if you get enough for your fruit, you can kind of help out nature with doing other sizes.
Well, and I'll always remember this, you know, the late great James, he did the Mason bees for many years, Home Orchard Society. Now I can't remember. What was his name? In any event, it'll come to me.
Okay.
You know, he was old, you know, lived in Southtown here, south of town.
I'm not sure I knew him.
Oh, yes, you did.
Okay.
James.
Well, Karen did him for a bunch of years.
No, even before that.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't doing sales. He was just doing Mason bees.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But, and would demonstrate at all sorts of home orchard events. But he had a smaller hole than the one we're talking about. I'll give you a hint here right now. The small hole was an eighth of an inch.
Okay.
And he had made saw kerfs an eighth of an inch and put wood together so he could take the wood blocks apart and then see what was inside there. And inside there were these were parasitic wasps that were using those holes at an eighth of an inch, and they don't collect pollen. So what do you think they had stashed for food source? Aphids.
Oh, nice.
Yes. See, that's what wasps do. You know, they feed their young meat.
Yeah, and I know a lot of time this time of year, people are getting angry about how many yellow jackets and other wasps are in. But I say, hey, they're meat eaters. If you don't like the aphids on all your plants, well, you know, guess what? Who's eating all the aphids?
Yep. But, you know, just to be clear here, if they're, you know, in the way and they're stinging somebody, then they got to go.
Yeah.
All right. Tammy says we've got some phone calls. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning.
You got an answer?
No.
Or a question?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I called ahead of the question.
That's all right.
I just had something on fermentation.
Sure.
Back in the late 70s, I acquired a book called The Throw Out Your Stove and Greasy Dishes No Cook Recipe Book.
Hmm.
Had a recipe in there for 3-day sauerkraut, and which just was basic: shred it up, put it in a jar and press it, and add juniper berries. And I just wondered, it worked, it's great. I wonder what the juniper berries do.
Well, juniper berries are a flavoring, but let's remember that juniper berries have a medicinal quality. There's a very famous supplement that a lot of people use. It's highlighted on the People's Pharmacy, which is you take white golden raisins and you put them in gin, and it decreases your arthritis. And so it makes your joints don't hurt anymore, which is something that people who are kind of easing into our golden years can appreciate.
Well, that's less painful than bee stings, too, if you've heard about bee stings.
I've heard about that. One experiment I did this summer was we were out hang gliding and paragliding in eastern Oregon, and there was a juniper tree there. So I just picked the berries off of it and put it into my golden raisins and gin sauce. It had more flavor and was probably more effective in decreasing the inflammation, which is something that doctors say all of us have to deal with inflammation, so it's useful in many ways.
Right.
So caller Dennis, you were thinking maybe the berries contributed some way to the actual fermentation, or John, what are your thoughts on that?
That's what I thought, is there was some antiseptic quality or something to it to keep the mold or something out.
Yeah, no, that definitely could be. Juniper berries are a traditional part of the recipe when people made it in Germany for hundreds and hundreds of years. So that could be very well. I mean, it could have been that I think a lot of times peasants are a lot smarter than we think of them. And so a lot of people say, well, when I eat this, my joints don't hurt. And when I put these in here, I don't get as much, you know, film and yeast and mold and stuff like that that I have to scrape off. So I think probably a lot of it was just some guy made this practical thing and, and it worked. And so they kept doing it.
Well, Dennis, you sure you weren't on the vodka page?
Well, Joseph Dinolfo was the author, and he, you know, I think he had an Italian background or something. So.
All right. Well.
Anyway.
Thank
okay.
You for the
thanks.
Thank
yeah.
You.
Thanks for the input. Okay. Let's stay with the phones. Oh. Okay. Good morning. You have a stumper answer for us?
Hi. I just have a guess.
Oh, that's fine.
Half inch.
That's too large.
I'm sorry.
We'll start on narrowing it down here.
Okay. You know, I just wanted to say, too, in case I'm sure you know, but people don't know, a really neat thing about scallions is you can use them again, like if you leave the roots and a little bit of the white part on.
Mm-hmm.
You just put them in some soil and they come right back up really strong.
How long?
As long as you want. Like you can cut off the greens again or use a whole onion.
Okay.
That is a great idea.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
But you got to leave a little bit of meat there, so to speak,
near the roots. Yeah, leave a little white and the roots and just put them in and then they grow immediately.
That's a great idea, and alliums are one of the very top things that you can eat for your health. Joel Furman, all the big nutrition doctors are telling me, you got to eat onion family vegetables to be healthy.
Yeah, they're great. I see why the Egyptians complained about not having them in the desert.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you, 15 years ago, I bought for $1 100 little needle-big leek plants, and I planted in my yard, and ever since then I've had all you can eat leeks. And when you talk about leek greens, you're talking about a lot of leafy greens that are also alliums. So those are like two of the best things you could possibly eat, alliums and leafy greens. And I do exactly what you do. I chop them off of the ground, just partly because you don't have to clean them. It's easier. I can be lazy and just throw them on there, cook them right up, and then there you go. You can ferment them, but you can also just cook them lightly, and
they're so good in everything. Eggs, rice.
Yeah, they're so plentiful. You just, you know, in between, mine grow in between about November and about July 1st. Uh-huh. So I don't have any this time of year, but I'll have them again in a couple months.
Okay. And I didn't mean the Egyptians. I meant the Israelites.
Yeah. That makes more sense to me.
Anybody who's without
anybody
onions.
Anybody would.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Thanks for the call.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. Good morning, Alan. You got a question or an answer? Or both?
Well, hi. Good morning. Just loving your show today.
Thank you.
I think I've got an answer. I think I've read this before once. It dawned on me somewhere in the back recesses of my memory. But that's a 3/8-inch hole for the mason bees.
Very close. I'm going to leave it up to Glenn there if he wants to call that.
I'd say, do we have any other callers? One other caller. Okay. We'll give it to him. Because that's close enough.
Yeah.
Because it's very close.
Yeah.
But we're talking specific here.
Yeah.
And realize that these are, you know, the difference to us is not great, but it is to an insect.
Yeah. And so it's possible that a large mason bee would really prefer that.
And they very well may use them.
Yeah.
And maybe just take more mud to round it off. But the correct answer is 5/16.
That was the answer.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. Was it 5/16? Yeah.
Right. And you can buy bits in that length.
Yeah.
And John pointed out that you really don't even need a drill.
Yeah,
if you have soft wood or a reed or
if you're low on funds and you don't, you know, maybe you're a renter and you don't want to buy a bunch of equipment, you know, I do a lot of it without the drill. You know, you're growing Jerusalem artichoke, or I find invasive teasel in a field somewhere and I chop it and I bring it back home and I make it into little.
And,
it's free.
And we've got tool lending.
Yeah.
How deep do you have to drill the hole then?
Well, see, optimal is about 6 inches because you want both the males and the females in the right ratio. If you make them too small, I think you only get the males.
Well, the males are about the last 2 inches.
Okay, yeah.
So if it's 6 inches long, then you have about twice as many females as males.
So it actually has to be, it's optimal to buy a pretty long drill bit.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it is like $12 instead of $3. But, you know, when you think about all the more fruit they're getting and how much nature you're providing for, you know, the whole community, you got to feel good about that. Yeah.
Okay, right. so this was Alan. So, Alan, be sure to stay on the line, and if you're interested in going to the showing of Tiny, a story about living small houses.
Okay, yeah, very interesting.
Okay,
could I ask one more question? Could you guys talk a little bit about sorrel?
Sure.
Doc?
Sure.
Yeah, because I mean that's like grows all over the place, sure. And I read that that was edible as well,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not sure. I have never tried it, and I also poke.
Right. Oh yeah, poke salad. Poke salad. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I always think of that poke salad. And yeah. Is that what they were talking, singing about?
Yeah, yeah.
It is, huh?
Gator's got your granny. Chomp.
Poke salad.
Chomp. Chomp.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tony Joe White.
Yep. Yeah, that's. Yeah. Okay, now back on task here. Okay, so Alan, very good.
Okay,
stay on. Yeah, give your name to Tammy. We'll make sure.
Okay, so Doc is one of the ones I was telling you earlier about. It's kind of a theoretically edible. I have some growing in my yard. It does have deep roots, so it's useful in your yard even if you're not going to eat it, which I don't. I chop it. Because the deep roots go in and get some of the minerals out of the subsoil, and you know, if you haven't really been carefully cultivating your soil or letting nature do it for many years, you're probably missing some nutrients. And so if you chop the leaves and throw them around your yard, you're going to get those nutrients come from the roots up into the leaves, and then the leaves, they go into the topsoil, which mm-hmm. is where you want them for the plants. You have to boil it like 4 times, and then you eat it, and you're like, now, why did I go to all of this work to eat this thing that I can just barely tolerate after, you know? So sorrel actually tastes good. The red vein sorrel is really, really pretty. So put it in a salad for your girlfriend, you know, and she'll just think you're wonderful. I'm not sure if that was too sexist. I apologize.
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, any salad, you know, it's good for a relationship.
Yeah, and the French sorrel is the really large leafed one. Now, there are native sorrels that are just, you know, the ones that look like clovers. It's called oxalis, and this is why you have to be a little bit careful about it. They have oxalates. As you go on in your years, like some of us are, you have to worry about things like gallstones and kidney stones, and oxalates can not only lead to those problems, but if you eat them at the same time that you are eating calcium, they will cancel out the calcium and they will just go out of your system. So you won't get enough calcium. So you kind of have to be careful when you're eating. So a good trick on that is if you got gallstone, kidney stone, actually issues like that, just don't eat them. The other thing is if you don't have that issue, eat them by themselves. Like eat in your yard, you know, eat some sorrel, eat some red leaf sorrel, and then just don't eat anything for half an hour. And then don't put in your salad with your, you know, cheese on it or something like that, because you won't get the benefit of the calcium.
All right. Okay, let's go back to the phones. Good morning, Don. You're with the Dirtbag.
Hi.
Oh, this is Don.
I have a question for you all. I got bacterial spot or bacterial speck in my garden really bad this year for the first time. So I'm being really tidy and pulled the plants out, but it really decimated my tomatoes and peppers. And I saw it actually get onto beans and potatoes, too. So I'm wondering, besides a really good garden cleanup this year, what should I do next year?
Well, there's a lot of things.
Yeah, and it's probably not one thing that's doing all of that to everything. John, that would be pretty unusual.
Yeah, about 18 years ago, I went to this Metro show that was about compost tea, and the guy teaching this class was named Glenn Andreessen. I think maybe you've heard of him. And so I learned how to make compost tea, and I literally, you know, my dogwoods were dying, my kiwis were dying. I had many, you know, I had probably $200 worth of plants that were dying and also years in the ground. And so I hadn't been doing all the, you know, wood chips and all the compost and all the good practices and the pruning and all the stuff that you're supposed to do anyway. So I made this bacterial compost tea and I sprayed it on all those plants, and instantly they went from black to green. Instantly they went from stagnating to growing again. And so I think compost tea can be a really great thing to do. It is a little bit involved. There's a Yahoo groups on compost tea. And that can tell you know, how to do it. It's a little bit, you need a bubbler, and it's a little bit of an extra.
And you can buy it at certain nurseries.
Yeah, you need to buy it while it's flowing.
You're right.
Don't buy it a week old because it will be no good.
Right. Yeah. And the whole idea of this compost tea is it's not your grandfather's compost tea where they would soak manure or compost for several days in a barrel and then drain off the leachate, which they would use for nutrients. Rather, this compost tea, this actively brewed compost tea, we're getting huge numbers of bacteria, some fungus, but mostly bacteria. And the idea by spraying it onto the plants is that it replaces the normal bacteria that should be there that's been compromised through pollution or pesticides.
Soil is not draining properly.
Hot sun or, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And so it's not better than compost, but it sticks to leaves better than regular compost.
It's more immediate. It would just be another part of your toolbox. In the long run, what nature does is drop down leaves and pieces of wood and make sure that there's a lot of healthy microbiology in the soil so that the soil drains well and that all the oxygenated good guys are there throughout the plants and the roots and all the mycorrhizal fungi are growing through there. But, in modern life, you don't necessarily have 2,000 years to wait for nature to turn it over. And, if you're like me and the last person sprayed it with toxins, it's not going to happen anytime soon, and you want to eat food soon. So, I would use a multi-pronged approach. I would use, do you have clay soil that doesn't drain very well?
No, it's a community garden, so the beds are all organic and fluffy, and I have been doing well until this year when the spot or whatever it is came in.
Yeah, on tomatoes, which are generally pretty trouble-free. I mean, there might be a little flea beetle early in the season, but late blight, it can be a problem, although I haven't seen it this year at all. And that's a fungal disease, not a bacterial disease.
Yeah, you have to be careful what you got, because there's a lot of powdery mildew in too, and that's a fungal disease also.
Yeah, I've done visual ID through a lot of websites, and I'm convinced it's bacterial spot or bacterial spec. But I'm wondering, should I take the break from growing anything this winter?
Or
what do I do next year? Should I put some different kinds of plants in than what I usually plant?
Maybe not plant as thickly, just more air circulation. Uh-huh. And John is right. You just make sure you have a lot of mulch down over the winter, or better yet, to plant a cover crop if you're going to be coming back to that same plot.
Okay, great.
A cover crop. We'll mm-hmm, probably talk yep. about that next month, but this is the month that you can start planting those.
Great.
So that's
thanks
good.
So much for your thanks. Thoughts.
You bet.
One thing I realized, we didn't really answer his question about poke.
Oh, you're right.
We sang, but we didn't answer. Right. I think he wanted the answer really rather than the song. Poke is one of those things that people do eat in the South, and it grows, and it grows better in hotter places than where we live. It is one of those things that you have to cook a whole bunch of times, and you can only eat it young, and it is poison if it's later. I think it's not worth trying to eat, and especially up here when we have so many other weeds that are
I think it's considered a noxious weed. I've seen them growing
in
out
some
of
places. I don't know
out
about
of
here
out of storm drains. I mean they seed at the bottom and grow up three or 4 feet and then up.
Sure. I know that it's a noxious weed in hotter climates than ours, but mm-hmm. I don't know about here.
Those berries, I don't know.
I think they're poisonous too. Yeah, a lot of the parts. It's one of those. It's not one of the better ones. There are so many great weeds. Dandelions. I mean, my gosh, they're so easy.
That just doesn't have any ring to it, though.
Nobody sings songs. No, right. Oh wait, Rolling Stones. Dandelion will make you wise. Sorry for the. I'm not obviously a professional singer. So.
Yeah, Tammy cut his mic. All right. Okay, well, I think we need to take another break here, continuing on our digging theme, Tower of Power, digging on James Brown.
Yeah, they've been digging my potatoes.
All right, well, that wasn't Tower of Power, but that's still in our theme here. I didn't mislabel it. No, that's James Cotton, Digging My Potatoes. That's all right. We'll get to that Tower of Power maybe another time, or even today. We'll just squeeze it in at the end there. Let's go to the phones here. We'll take care of those, and then we'll talk about some of the experiments that we're doing. Okay, good morning.
Good morning.
Natalia, good morning.
I was wondering, I have a few questions. If there are any specific varieties of fall or winter vegetables that, like, if I buy them as starts, I can still put them in my raised beds?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know all the charts of planting time say, like, forget about it, but...
If you could buy starts of chard, I'd plant them if you could buy starts of chard. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. And then I bought one of your pineapple guavas. Do I need to cover them up for the winter?
How old is it?
We just put it in, like, the spring.
So I would cover it up. You know how sometimes we get down to, like, 12 degrees or 10 degrees for a few days.
Yeah.
I would cover it then. But I wouldn't, if it just down to 20, I wouldn't cover it.
Yeah, okay. They're pretty hardy for this area.
I've had a couple in the ground for about 15 years, and I moved them about 5 years ago. And it took them a while to come back. Evergreen plants usually don't really like being moved, but they've been in the ground. They've never been protected.
Oh, awesome. Okay, and then my last question is your personal favorite ground cover?
Ground cover or cover crop?
I'm sorry, cover crop.
My favorite are fava beans.
And do you like that with a light Chianti?
Yeah, actually I grow them to eat. But
well, the variety of fava bean that we generally grow as a cover crop is banner fava, and they're not large beans, and they're not the best either. But they're a great nitrogen fixer, and they're a beautiful plant. They're not as winter hardy as my second favorite, which is crimson clover.
Okay.
But both of those.
I have that. I think that might be prettier, actually, because my garden's in my front lawn. So.
Well, the fava beans, they have a beautiful white-purple bloom, and they can be 3 to 6 feet tall.
And when should those go in the ground?
Oh, towards the end of this month.
Okay.
Actually, you could try it now. I wouldn't try it for another week. It's going to be too hot.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much. Great show.
You bet. Thank you.
Actually, I don't usually do cover crops anymore because I do a permaculture-style food forest. So I have crimson clover, and it just showed up one day, and I let it grow as much as it wants to. It adds nitrogen all year round. It's pretty. It attracts bees. I did grow fava beans, and I like that. That was good. But I don't really have, you know, the raised beds are really the only place that doesn't have the crop in it. I have so many self-seeding vegetables that there's going to be something growing in there, whether I do it on purpose or not anyway. And so many weeds that I enjoy that they're just going to be growing there, you know.
And to further answer her question about what else could be planted this time of year, you know, lettuce, you could still get some crops of lettuce and maybe some other fast-growing greens, certainly. You might try peas. It's going to be hard to germinate those in the next week.
Turnip greens are a good one.
Yeah.
Kale. Kale is the unofficial vegetable of Portland.
Yeah, although, you know, if you do it right, you plant kale once a year or let it seed once a year and then just keep harvesting.
And eating. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So those are some ideas there. Mm-hmm. Okay, any questions? Phones. Beverly. Good morning, Beverly.
Good morning. I'm calling about, speaking of chard, I grow organic, and I'm having trouble with my chard. I think there's an insect in the leaves.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Leaf miner, yeah. I would guess.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. What can I do about that? Or like my neighbors don't have it, but I have it.
Well, what I do mm-hmm. is attract the predators of those leaf miners. And what are those mm-hmm. predators? The large wasps.
I'm talking
mud daubers, paper wasps, uh-huh. and, dare I say it, yellow jackets.
Wow.
They will tirelessly look for the larvae, and the larvae are what are eating the leaves. It's a fly that lays its egg, and the egg hatches into a larva, which tunnels in and then through the leaves and making them.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do then is, when I have a leaf that is infected, what do you think I do with that? Beverly, what do you think I do with those infected leaves?
I'm not sure.
Okay, I'll tell
I'm
you
really
then.
Curious.
We're running out of time.
Go ahead.
I leave them. Why?
Oh, see, I've been tearing them off.
Right, because then you have no reason for the wasps to come to your garden if they don't have that food source there. So I leave outer leaves that are infected and affected, and will then harvest pretty pristine leaves from the middle. And it's pretty sustainable that way. And occasionally I might have to rip out a little corner of a leaf, but.
Yeah,
it's sustainable, and it's good for me too. Now, it's not necessarily that Better Homes and Gardens is going to come and take a picture of my chard, but if you grow Bright Lights or City Lights chard, which have these neon colors, you know, that's just attractive enough right there.
Good.
So it can work. It does work. So I don't worry about it.
Also, alternating rows so you don't have one giant monocrop block of one plant is a good idea. Different kinds of plants, preferably that aren't related. So you don't want like Swiss chard and then beets and then, you know, radishes.
Oh, is that right?
That's one of the reasons I do a permaculture food forest, is because the fruit are by nature not related to leafy vegetables and fungus. Uh-huh. Mushrooms are certainly not related to, you know, leafy plants, you know, so different families of plants, you know, even your tomatoes are a different family than your leafy greens.
Good. Okay. Well, I sure appreciate your help.
You're welcome.
Bye.
John, tell me an experiment that you did this year.
Hugel culture was one that I did this year. Actually, I did one last year, but I didn't like research it at all. And then this year, Paul Wheaton at permies.com had a Kickstarter. He said, you throw $5 in, you get to look at these videos. So I actually watched the video about the hugel culture. And so I actually dug it out. I had all this wood because I grow mushrooms and I drill the dowels in there. And then some of them are extra. And so dig out in the ground, put some soil, put some wood in the ground, and then add a little soil, and then you can add a branch or some leaves or some compost, some different things, and then more wood, and you build it up over the ground. And
I should just mention that this is kind of a type of composting.
Yeah, it's based on a nurse log that you see in a forest, you know, where the tree falls over and plants grow out of that tree that's fallen over. So I'd actually been doing this for a few years because trees like fungal soil, you know, more than leafy, you know, small plants, forbs do. So, but this is a more intense version of packing the wood in. And then it's raised up so you actually get more terrain. You get 3D terrain. It's, you know, 6 feet high instead of just flat. So you get more terrain in your yard as well, which is a nice thing.
You know, speaking of 3D, we have one final garden stumper to do here. Let's see if we can squeeze in this. So you're going to have to call quickly.
What is one major benefit of actual trees in your garden of three dimensions, and why are they more valuable in sustainable gardening than espaliers? Remember, an espalier is where you take the rootstock and you prune it very, very carefully so it's growing along a wire.
And kind of two-dimensional. You know,
what's
the benefit of having a three-dimensional tree here rather than a more narrower two-dimensional?
Yeah.
Okay, we've kind of already hit on this reason somewhat here.
Yeah.
Okay, well, the major experiment that I did this year, it was, you know, for years we've talked about bagging apples.
Yeah.
You know,
and
it's a wonderful method.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be a little time consuming, but still.
Sure.
I've always say that you spend more time cutting a worm out of an apple than you do putting a bag on it. So, so you're better off to do it than not do it. But. So as an experiment this year, what did I do? I didn't bag apples. I bagged the tree.
Wow. That must have been a big bag.
Or a small tree.
Yeah.
And it's some of both. And it wasn't a bag. I used floating row cover and just wound it around, you know, kind of like gauze around a wood, you know, your arm or whatever like that. So I took about two wraps because the floating row cover was probably 8 feet in diameter or so.
Yeah.
And, but by golly, it worked.
Wow.
And now
how long did you leave it on for?
It's still on.
Wow.
And I'm going to take it off soon, but I thought, I don't want to take it off before this 95-degree weather comes, and then because it does shade them a little bit.
Sure.
But I've looked through the gauze or the floating row cover and looked in there, and they're nice size apples.
Great.
And
no holes?
No. And boy, it was a bad year, and I didn't bag any apples otherwise, and I should have. But at least I'll have one tree.
That's a really interesting experiment. I will really look forward to hearing from, talking to you in October.
See
if what percentage came out, whether there's a difference in ripening times. I noticed a lot of people are saying with global warming, or what are we supposed to call it now? Climate change.
Mm-hmm.
The ripening gets, the bugs come earlier and earlier. So I used to, say, hey, May 7th, I need to get all my footies or my fruit socks or my Ziplocs or my whatever bags I'm putting on the food are. Well, it was too late. I got out there to try to get the...
May 7th? That early?
Yeah. I tried to get the Asian pears, and it's like, sorry, done. You know, it doesn't do any good to put the bag on after the worm's already there. So I just gave up on the Asian pears, and I went to the apples, and I was still a little bit late on the apples. One thing I have found, though, is when you put the fruit socks or the Ziplocs or whatever you're putting on, if it's too late, you still only get one worm. You don't get 15. And when they fall, the squirrels don't steal them like they do the other way. So it's kind of helps. You do sometimes with a Ziploc, you will sometimes get a sun scald. You get a little black dot, which it's really bad if you're a market garden person and you're trying to make money off of it. Yeah, it's not so bad if you're just feeding your family,
Okay, let's see if we have an answer. Jersey. What you got?
Because it didn't give me the best clues, I'm just going to guess basically soil nutritional support. Anything that falls and leaves in denser amounts and over a large area might be better for the soil.
Well, that's certainly true.
Yeah, that's true. It wasn't what we were looking for, but three dimensions. I'll leave it to Glenn. I mean,
that is three dimensions.
The more you have, the more you get.
So,
and we don't have any other calls, do we? Tammy. No, okay, you're it.
I think
you're it. Okay.
Right.
Should we give them the answer we were looking for?
Yeah, I just want to mention, stay on the line, and Tammy will get your name, so it'll be at the door for Tiny, the documentary at the about small houses.
Good.
At the Hollywood Theater on last time, September 25th at 7:30.
So what we were looking for on that one with the three dimensions is that I talked to a bunch of people were freaking out about the spotted wing Drosophila fly in the last several years. And I talked to an entomologist about it. She said one of the best things you can do is have plants of different heights in your yard, because then spiders can go all. And I have just tons of spiders, and small birds can hide away from big birds, which will try to eat them, and they eat insects and they eat things that are eating your
plants. Have you had a problem with them?
Not a big problem with spotted wing Drosophila.
Boy, so, I have.
Yeah. Whew. It's the blackberries.
I'm a bird watcher. I'll watch out for that more often.
Yeah. And plus, we get lots and lots of cute little birds that are singing pretty songs. So,
Well, I see spiders in my raspberries. And so I leave them. I see them all over the place too, but and even in my espaliers.
Well, see, I do like spiders and snakes, and that is what it takes for me to garden. Hoo-hoo.
Yeah, that's somebody else, isn't it?
Jim Stafford.
Yeah, thank you. All right. Well, it's been a packed show, John. We will certainly see you at the
All About Fruit Show
on the, whatever it is, the 21st, something like that, of October.
Right.
October. So we'll be able to talk about that again. Thank you all for the calls. And Tammy's on the phone. Let's go out with Tower of Power, which is Digging on James Brown. We'll do that rather than our regular theme song.
You know what I'm talking about? I just can't help myself. I've been through all them changes. A lot of stuff came down. I dealt with all the issues. You might say I've been around. When it got started, there was a righteous sound. It doesn't matter what I've been through, I'll still be digging on James Brown.
And James Brown brings us to the end of Public Affairs for Wednesday morning. Thank you for tuning in. The Garden Spout is, let's see, this KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. Also by Northwest Connector, connecting riders to the Oregon coast through daily round-trip bus routes from Portland, Salem, and Corvallis. Northwest Connector buses are equipped with bike racks and offer 3-day and 7-day passes with transfers up and down the coast. Schedules and trip planner at nwconnector.net. Thanks for tuning in to Public Affairs this morning on KABU. Jazz Lives is coming up next. We have a jazz invasion happening here. I hope you can stay tuned for that. And without further ado, we're going to go right to KABU Noon News headlines.
This is KABU Headline News at Noon for Wednesday, September 10th, 2014. I'm Diane Erickson.
And I'm Patrick Wilson. In local news, the director of the Portland VA Medical Center announced last month that their electronic wait list had been cut to zero. But this does not mean that all the local veterans waiting for medical care